Hello, welcome to the New Stack Makers, a podcast where we talk about at-scale application development, deployment, and management.
Hi, this is Jennifer Riggins, your host of this special episode of the New Stack Makers. We are recording this a little after 6:30 p.m. Eastern European time on Thursday, the 17th of March. Things are very much in flux right now, and the volatile situation on the ground in Ukraine will have likely changed by the time you hear this. So this is just a snapshot in time. Today, we are talking with three Ukrainian leaders in the open source world about their own experiences going on right now and the way in which open source and the tech industry as a whole can support our colleagues and friends that woke up to war on the 24th of February, 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine. So today we are talking to Anastasi, who is an expert in software security and applied cryptography, currently the head of customer solutions and a security engineer at CrowSec Labs, and an active member of Women Who Code Kyiv. We also have Alexei, who is a software consultant, as well as a very active open source maintainer. You definitely know him from different things that you've probably connected to on GitHub, as well as Dennis, who is a front-end engineer at Wix and is also an active open source community leader and maintainer, including the very funny and popular WTFJS, and also who was the organizer of a very moving Twitter space last week that we will include in the show notes. That was the experience of just the voices of Ukrainian open source contributors reflecting on the first 8 days of the war. So of course, that will be in this wild times would be an outdated, but an important snapshot in time as well. So we will share all of these in the notes and share as many links as possible and ways to support. So thank you for those listening and thank you three for joining us. Let's start by getting to know each of you. If you can in turn introduce yourselves, give us your background in tech a bit more. I just gave a little bit. There's plenty for each of you. And then give us an idea of what you're going through right now, where you're calling us from. Describe the situation as much as possible for the audio audience. And what's your contribution to what's happening in Ukraine right now in the defense effort? Let's start with Anastasi.
Hi, hello everyone. Good morning, good evening, whatever you listen us here. My name is Anastasi and I'm a security software engineer. Basically, I was a regular software engineer. I was doing a lot of applications, including mobile applications, until on some point I switched to security engineering and cryptography. And now I do a lot of things in security engineering space, including maintaining some open source security and cryptography tools, right? One of the projects I maintain is Temis, which is open source cryptography library that works across, 15 platforms and languages. And our latest one is React Native. We added this support previous week during the war. Of course, we were working on it for a couple of months before, right? But technically, the release happened last week. It was unbelievable, let's put it this way. Right now, I'm in the western part of Ukraine, in the mountains, in a small village that it's not even on a map, enjoying the situation. No, actually struggling a lot and working a lot. There is no weekends anymore. I wake up, clean my teeth, I have some food, I work. And then in the evening, I have food again and then work again, right? Because there are so many things that should be done right now. And as a cybersecurity engineer, me and my team, we really work a lot on our usual work. Let's put it this way, on our usual projects and on, of course, on supporting Ukraine and supporting Ukrainian companies and helping them with improving their security and their resistance because they might be a target of attacks. That's all from my side.
Thank you so much for that in talking about the lack of work-war balance. It's not work-life balance anymore, but I think everyone I've spoken to there definitely seems in a similar situation. I think I may have been following Anastasi anyway, but something that personally struck me was on the 23rd or 24th of February, we were both in the same magazine, for lack of a better word, for container solutions. And you had tweeted out you were concerned that was going to be your last article. And that was profoundly moving. And just as a journalist as well, it's a good way to remember as journalists are part of this war, though not me. So I really appreciate the time and the contribution you're doing right now, because it is wild and it's difficult to launch something new, but that is a whole new level of launching something while everything else is going on. Alexi, same question. Can you introduce yourself and tell us about your current snapshot of your life, please?
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Alexi. I am originally from Kyiv. I mean, saying originally at this point sounds weird because I've always lived there. I've recently only moved to Lviv when the invasion started. Myself, I'm a software consultant. I work mostly in the .NET space, designing microservices, cloud solutions, and things like that. And I also do open source, again, mostly in .NET space, with libraries that a lot of people use, such as CLI Wrap, CLIFX, and ALPA, YouTube Explode, and things like that, as well as some desktop applications too. Besides that, I also have some engagements in the community through speaking or blog posting and a few recognitions such as Microsoft MVP and GitHub Star Awards. The snapshot of my life so far, it's been very chaotic. I can't really explain it in less than probably an hour of talking about it, but it's really hard to really think about what's going to await us in a week or even tomorrow, to be honest. And right now I'm just still staying in this hotel room that I booked when I evacuated from Kyiv on the night of the invasion and trying to do my best to kind of keep my composure, try to keep working on things that I believe can make a difference and try not to succumb to the feeling of despair or dread of what's to come. At the very least, I think I'm very lucky to be in a position that I am. I'm in relative safety. The worst that I can experience, I think so far that I have experienced, is having to go to the bomb shelters at night, having a lot of interrupted sleep. But other than that, I think I don't have anything to be upset about compared to a lot of people that are experiencing far worse circumstances right now.
Of course, but also remember, it's okay to feel that way. You have a lot of things to be upset about, but that is very kind and thoughtful and empathetic of you to say. So thank you very much. And do you want to mention the thing that you released yesterday? Again, this is March 17th. Do you want to mention that tool? It's quite useful.
Yeah, I actually forgot about it. I guess one of the positive aspects, if you can say that, of what happened to us is that I got a lot of motivation to actually like do things for the sake of my country or for the sake of our people. Besides, you know, the regular everyday things that people do, such as donating or, you know, helping each other out. The only other thing I'm kind of good at is writing code. So I decided to fix one of the issues, I guess, that was bothering me for a while, which is the sort of duality of transliteration systems when it comes to Ukrainian place names and personal names and things like that. So for instance, like the capital Kyiv is typically written in English in two different ways, depending on whether you're transliterating from Russian or from Ukrainian. And it just so happened that Ukrainian as a language has been oppressed for a really long time. So Russian language kind of took precedence when it came to education, businesses, and things like that. So as a result, during the Soviet Union era, all of the place names and things like that carried over to English language transliterations of Russian version of those names. I think for Ukraine right now, one of the important things that everybody's trying to do is establish our own identity, separate from all of those relics of the past, as its own country with its own people, with its own language. One of the ways that I personally believe we can help Ukraine achieve that is by using the correct transliteration based on the Ukrainian languages when we refer to different cities and things like that. So what I did was build a web application where everybody can go to, and if they're like want to write about an article, for example, or a tweet about a city in Ukraine, but they're not sure what's the correct way to write it in English, they can quickly look it up by either writing it Ukrainian in English, but the way they assume it could be written, because there are many keywords and aliases that it can look up based on. So you can easily check it there and make sure you're using the correct spelling.
It's also one of those things that, at least in American English, we've been mispronouncing it as Kyiv this whole time, whether we're talking about chicken or the capital. And I do hear, at least NPR, they are consciously pronouncing it Kyiv, or at least not Kyiv. I hear it still in quite a few different pronunciations, which is a problem, but at least we're trying. And I think it's an it may seem small, but it's an important thing to honor your language and to just be respectful to other cultures. So thank you for that contribution as well, Alexi. Dennis, do you want to introduce yourself from the open source world and then your current situation, please?
Hi, everyone. I'm Dennis. Currently, I work as a front-end engineer for Vix.com. I'm actively involved in Ukrainian JavaScript community. I speak at the conferences and meetup. I organize conferences and meetup myself. I have also built some open source projects that help people around the world, and those people find those projects useful. Specifically, you may know me from projects called Spaceship Prompt, WTFJS, some UI cards for home automation tool called Home Assistant, and so on. I open source stuff that I build by default, so there are plenty of stuff that I open source in my GitHub profile. I'm 25. I write code since I was 13. I was freelancing when I was studying at school, and I started working as a part-time developer when I was studying at university. And then I gradually switched to a full-time job. Last 3.5 years, I worked for Vix, and I'm happy to do so. Vix is the best employer I had so far. And we have a very complex and interesting project right now. And I'm involved with writing open source stuff for Vix as well. Originally, I'm from the city of Chernivtsi. It's located in the western part of Ukraine. I relocated to Kyiv when I started working for Vix. And I spent the last 3 years of my life in Kyiv. And I left the city on February 15th, at the moment when it felt like the war was inevitable, though we were still hoping that Putin is not so dumb to wage a full-scale conventional aggressive war in the 21st century. Unfortunately, that's not the case. So we left the Kyiv to my hometown, Chernivtsi. Why? Because embassies were being evacuated from Kyiv at that moment. Many companies, Vix including, was evacuating everyone who wished to do so abroad. For instance, Vix was evacuating employees to Turkey or Poland. We packed our stuff, and that was a tough part, actually, because no one knew for how long we were leaving, so we didn't know what to take with ourselves. Since February 15, we were staying in my parents' house in Chernivtsi, and the invasion began in the morning. For me, it began with my mother entering my room, and she was disturbed and almost crying. She said, "Putin attacked us. The war has begun. Kharkiv, Kyiv, Lviv, other cities are being hit by missiles." And I immediately dressed up, drove to the gas station because we were afraid of shortages, food shortages, gas shortages, and so on. So the first day was shocking. No one could eat anything. We were all following the news back then. Then people started fleeing westward. My coworkers, my friends were trying to get out of Kyiv. There were airstrikes, traffic jams. That was tough. For example, the road from Kyiv to my hometown usually takes 7 hours by car. And for them, it took 30, 40 hours to get to my hometown. In my house, my parents' house, I hosted my teammate with his wife. His wife was pregnant with twins. She gave birth on March 7. Now they have twins. We also hosted our friends at my house. And at some point, it was a total of 10 people, 3 dogs, 3 cats living in my house simultaneously. That was actually crowding. So at the moment, we were trying our best to help them, my teammate, his wife, their children, our friends. We were trying to find them housing, simple home appliances, food, cover their basic needs. Also, the boyfriend of the sister of my girlfriend, she was conscripted to army. So we are trying to find him additional stuff that might be needed for him. Also, I'm trying to support different initiatives and charities. I'm trying to spread awareness I visited a crash course for handling an assault rifle, basic tactics, survival, and tactical medicine. Obviously, that's not enough, but I'm trying my best to be helpful. Additionally, I also transitioned back to work because I understand it's important for the economy to earn and spend the money, pay taxes, donate to charities. And as a person who generates a flow of foreign currency to Ukraine, I'm feeling responsible to keep the economy flowing. And in my city, in Chernivtsi, it's relatively calm. At the moment, there were some airstrike alerts. Typically, that happens during the night. For example, today, the siren went on at 4 a.m. in the middle of the night. Sometimes it happens for a few days in a row, but actually, that's not that bad. For example, in cities located eastward, it's way worse than we have here. It's relatively calm here.
Thank you so much. And for those that are listening to the podcast, there was a lot of nodding along, both in experiences and in helping people, but also the nodding started when I started coding when I was 13. I think it's important to explain why we're having this conversation. And part of it is that Ukraine's biggest service export and third biggest export is IT outsourcing. So if you've worked on a tech team in Europe of any size, or if you've worked on any team of a certain size, you've worked with Ukrainians. It's normal to want to help, but it's important to ask what is needed. So we're having this conversation to start to understand. And let's be honest, the open source community is what I look at as the community backbone for the tech industry. So having this conversation to understand how the open source community and the tech industry as a whole can support this with our remote colleagues and friends. What type of help is actually helpful and what is not right now? I know sending clothes arbitrarily to a foreign country is not how to directly help right now. It's better to put money, things like that I've learned. And knowing the specific needs that people have right now, Dennis, you were describing your kind of brother-in-law, I guess we'll call him, not to put too much pressure on your relationship, has specific needs in the military, which I guess is like helmets, vests, things like that, correct?
Yeah, potentially brother-in-law. Yeah, that's kind of correct. I guess the best way to help Ukraine is to visit one of the websites like war.ukraine.ua. There is news channels there. There are also ways to donate to the army, to charities, humanitarian aid, and so on. Also, you can find a local initiative in your city. There are a lot of Ukrainians living abroad. So I bet there's a local initiative in big cities or even smaller ones all around the world. So you can find those and ask what they need. Additionally, there is a huge initiative called Come Back Alive. That's a charity that buys additional stuff for the army, like night vision, helmets, and so on and so on. So yeah, we can share some links in the description, I guess, with additional information where you can help Ukrainians.
Yeah, another opportunity is actually many Ukrainians, especially software developers, they continue working, right? So a very good opportunity is continue working with them. You know, like buy Ukrainian software products, engage with people who are working at Upwork and companies like that, right? So just support Ukrainians by giving them ability to work, to do some paid work. Because as Dennis mentioned, right now, many people, they relocate from their hometowns. And we as software developers, we are super privileged because we only need a laptop and internet to work, right? So we grabbed our laptops with us when we were like leaving our city. But many people, they cannot do that. So right now, in many families, only one member has actually a job. Right. So it's very important to continue giving this opportunity to work. And I've seen many websites that actually help Ukrainians, especially Ukrainian refugees that are working in software. They help to hire those people in a faster way that it's typically done in European countries, which is also great.
And I saw Alexi DM saying, I didn't have a laptop. Please tell, explain more.
Yeah, well, it was just Anastasia was talking about how we only need a laptop. I mean, she's completely correct that we are very privileged in that regard. I was just commenting, saying that when I moved here, I didn't actually have a laptop, even though like I packed everything. I didn't have one altogether because I was using a desktop PC. My backpack was packed on an assumption that I would have to spend a lot of time outside or not being able to like actually have a place to stay where I would need a laptop. So I'd never considered buying it. And instead I was just like packed a bunch of food and all of those other kind of supplies. But it turned out it would have actually been useful. But there are a lot of local communities in different tech spaces, and a person from one of those communities was able to help me out and borrowed me a laptop, basically.
How else does the open source community fit into this? I saw, Alexi, if I may quote your GitHub, as I was obviously stalking you on GitHub ahead of an open source call, you have a terms of use. By using this product or its source code for any purpose and in any shape or form, you grant your implicit agreement to all the following statements. You condemn Russia and its military aggression against Ukraine. You recognize that Russia is an occupant that lawfully invaded a sovereign state. You support Ukraine's territorial integrity, including claims over temporary occupied territories of Crimea and Donbas. And you reject false narratives perpetuated by Russian state propaganda. Then you have a link to learn more about Ukraine. And then, Dennis, you have a similar text in there. How does GitHub fit into all of this? Alexi, how have you had reaction? Is this a trend going on right now to add this as a caveat to your open source usage and license?
I'll start with my, I guess, case, because I don't think it's that widespread. But yeah, in my case, I was basically, well, open source for me is a very big part of my life. I don't try to like gain anything out of it. I just code things. And whenever I have a problem, I solve it. I think to myself, why not share it with other people? And that's kind of my open source activity in a nutshell. And like every time I think about how I can help my country, like the people defending us or helping us, like every time I think about it, I come back to open source because it's one of those areas that I have somewhat of an influence, right? And on top of that, it also didn't make me feel very, I guess, it kind of made me feel a bit upset knowing that there are probably people out there that are effectively using the product of my unpaid labor in a way and to support the aggression against my country, even if they don't like actively go out or they're not actual soldiers like bombing civilians and things like that. They still might support it. So I decided to kind of make my position very explicit, knowing that it's not going to deter anybody from like just using those projects anyway, obviously, but at least putting it out there, saying that if you're using it, you're like assumed that your conscience has to be clear. Otherwise, I don't like you or something like that. It kind of just makes me feel better. And yeah, there were a lot of responses to that. I posted about it on Twitter after I added those things to my projects. Most people were understanding / accepting of the situation. Of course, a lot of people were saying that it breaks the concepts of open source, that this is no longer free, this is no longer open source altogether. And ultimately, while I agree with all of those statements that it's probably not open source anymore, to me, it doesn't really matter. Because when people are bombing my country, when I might not have a home to return to, when people that I've spent so much time with and talked to and I've known for years might be dead, the last thing I worry about is puristic ideals of open source. So if I have a way to help or like contribute or have any kind of influence in this regard, then I would do everything that I can. That's my opinion.
So GitHub leads to an interesting conversation in open source in general. Yes, everyone's like, okay, great. They don't have McDonald's or Starbucks anymore in Russia because they've pulled out. And those are usually bottom-up initiatives in these organizations, it seems like. But there is an ongoing debate of should GitHub block Russia? As there are definitely open source projects that are used for defense or obviously most organizations have some sort of open source in their stack, so they are profiting indirectly or directly from open source. What do we think? I'm going to leave it open to the floor. How should open source be used or not used in this situation?
In my personal opinion, I think that the bare minimum that companies should do as far as morals are concerned is not to pay taxes in Russia, because as it stands now, when you're paying taxes in that state, you are contributing to whatever is happening right now. Whether or not companies pull out of Russia completely, obviously, like McDonald's, there is no reason for them to give out free food, so they would have to sell it and as a result pay taxes, so they would pull out completely. But in case with services like GitHub, which offers sort of some kind of free options, whether or not they should pull out as well, for me at least, is a question with a lot of tentative topics that I'm not really ready to answer. But at the very least, I think platforms like that should make it very clear where they stand and promote sources of information where people can learn about those things more and potentially like help by donating or other things like that.
I have an opinion about it. I will explain that by example of Wix. Wix also have freemium payment model. So there are free websites and paid websites. So Wix blocked all payments in Russia. So there is no possibility to pay for your premium website. But you still can make free one. And that's a possibility for Russians to express them. And this is a space for free speech, which is limited in Russia. I guess GitHub can do similarly. For example, it can allow creating public repositories in Russia, but block creation of private repos and also block payments for enterprises and private users. For example, block pro plans on GitHub in Russia. Why so? Because I believe open source community is deeply connected, and blocking access for Russian developers might cause serious issues in infrastructures. A lot of projects are actually made by Russian developers, for example, PostCSS, Nginx, PostHTML, so on and so on, lots of different projects. And we can make Russian be able to create public repos in order to support free speech, in order to spread open source. But we should ban large companies in Russia that pay in taxes for Russia that are using GitHub for their business. So no business on GitHub, only open source. For example, I tried Googling big Russian companies on GitHub. I saw Gazprom, that's a state oil and gas company in Russia. They're using GitHub for their needs. Also, Russia Today, that's a propaganda outlet in Russia, they're also using GitHub. So that can be blocked for them, and they will not be able to use this platform anymore for their nasty business. That is my opinion on that.
Thank you very much. That's an important topic and a very interesting one that I think will continue to evolve. And perhaps by the time people are listening to this, things may have changed for sure. Anastasi, since your area is cybersecurity and everything is so vital in both hacking on both sides and also in disinformation campaigns, etc., what role does the cybersecurity segment or sector area of tech have to play? What can they do to help the cause?
Well, that's a lot of happening right now in cybersecurity and information security, because, you know, the part of this war is digital, right? We see all everything like happening in Twitter. And, you know, as in any war, the information flow, the intelligence is super important. So from cybersecurity perspective, it means that data should be protected, right? What I see right now and only things I can share, I can't share anything related to military communications, for example. But from the civilian perspective, I see that many people in Ukraine, they switch to use Signal as a messenger just because Signal is more trusted, it's encrypted, yada, yada, yada. So they try to avoid sharing information in Viber, Telegram. Right. I also see that many Ukrainian companies are under attack from let's not call the names, from different actors, we know who. And one of the threats are actually data leakage and data loss. It means that attackers go inside the company infrastructure and they try to delete the data, delete the databases, deface the websites, yada, yada. So what we see as a data security company right now is a huge, huge demand of data protection capabilities. For civilians, meaning to store information securely, to create mobile applications, for example, to help Ukrainians. And these mobile applications should be able to store data securely and to communicate, to transfer data securely, right? From business perspective, for companies that work in Ukraine that operate on personal identifiable information of citizens, we see demand from them to encrypt the data, to protect the data. So even if the company is attacked, the data is encrypted in the database. It's not that easy, you know, to make everything visible. And right now, for example, me and my company, we, part of our time, we volunteer for Ukrainian companies to review their infrastructure from security perspective, to find the most critical threats. And we help them to mitigate these threats, to band-aid the most pressing issues. Because security is the area that many companies try to do the last, you know, what can happen. And right now we can see what is happening. People spend enormous amount of hours trying to fix things. So yeah, I would say that from cybersecurity perspective, right now in Ukraine, there is a lot of demand. Maybe it's a little bit late, better late than never, right? There is a lot of demand for data security, for protecting companies' data and for protecting the communications for civilians.
And we know, yes, you are right. Across the board, security seems to be an afterthought, but the shit has hit the fan and we know it's true. So thank you for that. Just to close out, I learned this week that the first line of the Ukrainian national anthem is roughly translated, Ukraine's glory and freedom is not dead yet. It speaks to an overall sense of self-determination and resilience that we've definitely seen from your country. Just to end on kind of a positive note, as positive as we can in this crisis right now, what is something that helps you keep your hopes up? Dennis, if you want to start.
It's definitely Ukrainian army. They are performing really well, and I believe we will win. That's not a question, because waging war in 21st century is dumb, and it should not be a tool for achieving political goals. The world community should condemn that and should assure that Russia will not win in this war. We see this support from around the world, and this actually helps to believe that we will win.
Thank you. Alexei, what are your final thoughts and inspiration? Thank you.
Yeah, definitely inspired by our army, like Denise said. Apart from that, I think one of the most inspiring things I can see right now is how united everybody in Ukraine is, because I guess just a month ago, everybody had probably different opinions about different things. They had internal quarrels. There were different sides to different internal, obviously, affairs. And then after the invasion started, and ever since then, up until now, everybody is basically fighting on a united front and everybody has the same goals. It doesn't matter who they are, even what language they speak, or how did they end up in Ukraine, or what are their like ideals in life. None of that matters right now. All that matters is that we win this war. We come out of it as alive as possible, and we would rebuild our country to be better than it ever was.
Thank you. What you just described is a democracy working, and that's beautiful, that access to free speech and debate and the ability to unify. Anastasi, what is keeping your hopes up as best you can right now?
Well, I absolutely agree with Alexei and Denise that we will win and we will prevail. And of course, Ukrainian army right now, we have a lot of, not even hopes, we have confidence in our army, in our society, and in all of the people around, right? Because as Alexei mentioned, everyone is doing something. Everyone is working. And I mean, not working on a job, but doing things to make the victory closer as much as they can, someone makes the free food, someone works, right? Someone protects the country. All these people and many people, many Ukrainians living abroad and many foreigners, they support Ukraine and they put a lot of efforts. And even, you know, we all of us are here from like software engineering. Even if we try to calculate, we will take some hour rate and we'll try to multiply all the hours these millions of people put. We will see that they're doing huge, huge, huge amount of work. So yeah, we will win. We will rebuild the country. We are very sorry for losses, for cities and especially for people. But we will try to do better next time.
At the risk of butchering what we've learned over the last couple of weeks is a beautiful language. I should have asked you sooner. How do we say thank you in Ukrainian?
It's дякую.
Дякую.
Дякую. Yes. By the way, very similar to Polish, дякую.
Okay, дякую, each of you. And I'm sorry in advance for butchering your language. Thank you all for joining. This is Jennifer Riggins on the New Stack Makers, talking to some of the brave Ukrainian leadership from the open source world. Please follow them. Their Twitter handles and other resources that we've talked about, you'll find in the show notes. And do whatever you can to support the cause. Thank you, everyone, and good luck.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes on the New Stack Makers. Create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more articles and great stories, go to thenewstack.io.